Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence in You. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Ann Hirsch.
Still here.
And we are having a wonderful conversation with Josetta Pierce, who is the Executive Director of the Nassau County African American History Museum, and we're also very happy to realize that her husband wasn't arrested, which is very important. honestly, at the break we're talking, that's a great story, and how small the world really is. It's unbelievable. The question I had is the NOAA program. What is that exactly?
Actually, it's the... trying to remember the, what the
it was opportunities at Hofstra's and those they're college students that are coming over to you.
Yes, they do volunteer with us. There are students who may have needed remedial work before they came in, and they get coached all the way through the time they're at Hofstra. Was started, I believe, was Assemblyman Arthur Eve, who kind of came up with the idea that there needed to be special attention given to some students who may not have gotten a prior education as well as that was on a standard with others, and they may be college material but just not ready yet.
Oh, okay.
And that's how it got started. And the students, I'm so many fine persons have come out of that program. Every time I run into somebody and I talk with them, you know, they're professionals and whatnot. And I mentioned, oh, yeah, well, we would do this and we do that. We do this with Hofstra. Oh, Hofstra. Oh, yeah, that's right. I went there. I graduated from there. I was in the NOAA program.
Wow. Okay.
Attorneys and elected officials and even our art director here, Fatima White, she was a NOAA student, and she's absolutely a genius when it comes to art. She has left us to go to China.
Really?
Art at a brand new, newly built Chinese school. And she's it's a college for art, and she doesn't start until July, but she's so I don't know, she's a person that dots every I and crosses every T.
Okay.
She already left to go there because she wants to spend 6 months getting used to the dialect. She says she studied the Chinese language, but she has to live there in order for her to really pick up on the dialect, so when she starts in July, she'll be ready.
That's another person who owns their job. I mean,
absolutely.
People like that, like listening to you, Josetta, it's a pleasure because, you know, on occasion, not too often, because Christina does a wonderful job bringing people on this show. But once in a while, you get a person who it's just a job. And it's very hard to have a conversation because it's like, you don't really care. As long as you're getting a paycheck,
yeah,
you know, whatever happens between 9 and 5 is fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's not you. You're an inspiration for this program.
So much. I just enjoy doing things. I want to do the things I like to do.
Okay.
I wasn't really a person that just sat around and kind of I knit. I knit in the car when I'm going places, when I'm waiting for the doctor, when I'm on the airplane, that sort of thing. It doesn't consume my every moment, you know. It's just something that I do in between. But I really have to do something. I like people. I like serving people. I like to help people, you know, and that's the kind of thing that makes me really happy. When I get in here and I see people in the genealogy room, for instance, and they connect to a parent who they have lost touch with, or they learn some history that they didn't know, and they break out in tears, you know, saying, oh, my God, you know, she was a dressmaker. I'm the best sewer that ever lived, and just to think that my great-great-grandmother was a seamstress, you know, it's really amazing. It's a lot of good things that just come out of being involved. And the artists who come here, my goodness, the artists whose art we show. I mean, such passion, such emotion, such a love of life, you know, and when they depict the different things, different phases of life, different things that can happen to people, it's just so amazing to be around so many people who are really, I call them really sentient beings. They are really living. So they feel everything.
Right, right.
Josetta, when I looked over the notes which you were kind enough to forward to us before this radio broadcast, I made some notes, and if you don't mind, I just want to sort of air them with you and get your opinion or thoughts about them. you did renovations, which you had hoped the improvements will make the museum attractive to more traveling exhibits. And I know that Corinne Thompson of Rockville Center has also been involved with exhibits and so on. But my question involves the Museum of Modern Art. Oh, this is a couple of years ago, had a black art exhibit where they were showing how the people were leaving the South and going to the North, and it just gave the whole history in artistic form. Are you familiar at all with that exhibit?
I don't know that it's still together now, but it was about the Northern migration.
Yes, yes, that's exactly what it was. Did you, by any chance, have that chance of being able to show it here on Long Island?
No, we have. There has been one here. That was under the previous director here, David Beyer Tyre. He did the Northern migration, and he showed pictures of, and this was a photographic exhibit, and he had there's just so many pictures of people getting off the train and just showing life as it really was in those days, and they would have their packages with the food on it because they weren't allowed to go into the dining cars, and it was just a lot of really fantastic pictures. And he also did a second photographic exhibit that was about the civil rights movement, and it had pictures like when all of the civil rights workers went to Washington, D.C., the Poor People's March, where they settled there. They were there for weeks on the lawn at the Lincoln, where the Lincoln Monument is, all over the place, just to get their delegations ready to go in and speak to the elected officials and talk about their plight and what it was that they needed and things like that. So there's been a couple of exhibits here. One of the things that we did was a thing called Sons, Seeing the Modern Black Male. That was 2015. And the photographer came in, he took photographs of like 35 or 40 men from different walks of life. They were local. All of them had to be local. And I mean, it was everybody from the former mayor of the village of Freeport to a guy who had done 26 years for murder.
Wow.
Arrested when he was 14. He said he was taken advantage of. Somebody else did it, and he, you know, I don't know how he was involved, but he didn't actually do the killing. But what they did, they took him at 14 and put him in a reform school until he was old enough to be tried for murder, and then they gave him the time. And I mean, the Innocence Committee or whatever that was came and got him out. But what a wonderful person he was. I mean, he could talk philosophy. We had him as a speaker after he did his little thing in the exhibit. But the whole thing was about seeing the modern black male, because there's so many different phases of it, and sometimes people make assumptions as soon as they see a person, and not realizing that, and we really showed every kind of male black person you could find in this community. And it was really a great show. It lasted maybe about, it was supposed to be 3 months, but it was extended to 5 months because so many people were coming in to see it.
Wow. Does Gail King or Oprah Winfrey have any connection, since everything you're doing is, I think, everything they love?
Funny story. Before, when they first got started with the TV show, this goes way, way back, I called, and at that time, Gail was answering the phone at whatever this office was that Oprah was working from. So I explained to her that we were genealogists and we would love to do a celebrity like her. And Gail, at that time, did not think that it was anything that she wanted to do. She just thought,
are you serious?
Really? And she would never let us speak to her, and we called a couple of times, and we just dropped it. But then I saw she finally did sit down with Dr. Gates, and they did a big, you know, thing about her family history. And I said, oh, gosh, we could have did that 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Because I know that in Washington, D.C., there's a very large museum. Any connections or feedback on that?
Yes, the National Museum. It's owned by the Smithsonian. And we are an affiliate. This museum, we had to meet at the Brooklyn Museum about 2 years ago, because there weren't many artifacts available. It's just something about our community that when your grandma dies and she has this big, ugly black frying pan, You know, you dispose of that. You buy yourself some aluminum. You know, it's not a keepsake. And so there are not many things like that. There are old potbelly stoves and things like that. There was an outreach. They asked the local museums that were African-American or Afro-centered to meet at the Brooklyn Museum, and we were shown the process of being a satellite, letting people bring those things that they wanted to donate to our museum, and then we would, you know, handle getting it to the Smithsonian. And we've been in that situation, but we really have not had anyone to come in with any artifacts. We have the same issue here, but what we do storyboards, and we that's how we get attractive exhibits and things like that, because we tell stories about historic people, and we focus on the hidden stories. We have, like, everyone knows Rosa Parks, and she did her thing in Montgomery, which is a place nobody even heard of before Rosa did her thing there. But in New York City, there was a woman who desegregated public transportation here, but she's unknown. She's not listed in any history book anywhere. So we did an exhibit on her. We have a 6-panel exhibit. It's called The Upstanders, because everybody in her family did something historic. She desegregated public transportation. Her father was the father of dry cleaning, and her mother was probably the first feminist, because in 1837 she was saying things, and we have documents and a copy of her speech that was published in the newspaper. So we focus on those kinds of things that are encouraging, that are positive. We do have some things about the slavery issue and things like that, but our main focus is on the hidden history. With even the NASA, the women of NASA, they were considered to be hidden history until President Obama heard about them in 2015 and made it public. But we have an exhibit showing of the women who achieved that big space race and made that great contribution to that.
That was an amazing movie.
It really was.
I mean,
it's
a shame how things are not known in the world. And you'd almost think that was a made-up movie, and it wasn't. It was a true story.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was really unbelievable that they hired 24 African-American women, and three of them happened to be geniuses. What's the chances of that?
Right.
Yeah, that was quite a movie.
Yeah. And you know, they left out the most important person. It would never have happened if it wasn't for A. Philip Randolph. He was a unionizer. He organized the very first African American union. Was the Brotherhood of Train Porters.
Oh,
they were treated very poorly. You know, they couldn't
naturally
sleep in the quarters that white people had slept in. So there was no place for them to sleep when they took a 3-day trip. They had to sleep on the dining car tables. You know how small they are.
Mm-hmm.
Curl up into a little knot in order to sleep, and then get up in the morning, clean up the tables, and serve breakfast. So he started that union, and then when he heard in 1941 that FDR was going to start a federal defense agency and there would be plenty of jobs, he went to FDR and he said, listen, I know there's discrimination in every state, but if there's going to be federal jobs given out, I think they ought to be given out without discrimination. FDR agreed, but he knew that the House of Representatives wouldn't and the Senate wouldn't, so he issued Executive Order 8802. It prohibited race-based discrimination in the defense industry. And that's how the women got hired. Because other than that, they would never have been even to be allowed to work for the federal government.
Amazing. And that's a nice add-on to that story. And I had no idea. Joy said, this is amazing. We're out of time already. Unbelievable. I mean, we got like 10 seconds. I want to thank you so much. As Executive Director of Nassau County African American History Museum, you're just a great person. So have a wonderful day, a wonderful weekend, and you're listening to Senior Talk Radio on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.